Festive season's greetings to you, people of West Kirby United Reformed Church. It's only me again, Andy Kind, still holding fond memories, both of preaching for you online earlier during the pandemic, and also, of course, hidden in plain sight, which seems so long ago now. But I am back. Obviously, you can't find anybody else. Louise just doesn't try very hard. I think because my name begins with A, she just opens up a file of facts. Who can we get to preach? Oh, he'll do. He's the one in the bowler hat. He's a bit weird, but never mind. Now, I'm bringing you today a Christmas message. I'm merging the two things that I love to do and get paid to do, comedy and preaching. I've got a story that some of you will have heard before, but I think it's worth repeating. And also it allows me to birth out of that a Christmas message. And I say the word birth deliberately because Jesus is obviously born at Christmas time. That's what we're celebrating. And so I'm going to talk about the birth of my second baby, Heidi Grace Kind. And someone might say, I don't see how a baby being born 2,000 years ago on the other side of the world in a stable can have any relevance on my life. Presumably, though, if you are a religious skeptic, an atheist, or a cynic about all of these things, you still presumably believe that something which happened 13.8 billion years ago on the other side of the universe has relevance to you, which is that the universe began to exist. So time and distance are no great defeater of purpose and personal impact. Anyway, hopefully you'll find it easy to enjoy today. Hopefully you'll find it as easy as this particular episode of Where's Wally? Some mums sense when they're pregnant before they find out officially. My wife and I were sitting watching Homes Under the Hammer, as any self-respecting couple would do. She turned to me, she said, I think I might be pregnant. Now, what you need to know about me is I'm not very good at new situations. I panic. But I wanted to be the helpful husband. So what I said was, I'll get you some hot towels and cold water. My wife pointed out two things to me. Firstly, that she wasn't having the baby straight away. And that secondly, what I should have said was, I'll get you some normal towels and warm water. And what I had done was confuse having a baby to ordering Chinese food, which is in fact exactly what I'd done. Anyway, I wanted to be the helpful husband. So we thought about it. We did this kind of online not online pregnancy test. I don't mean that. It wasn't even a touchscreen. It wouldn't have been feasible. An online survey, that's what I mean. The 10 signs you might be pregnant. It asks you 10 questions to gauge whether or not you're pregnant. And it's absolutely ridiculous. The questions we were asked, have you put on weight? Are you experiencing mood swings? Are you suddenly addicted to the smell of creosote? Out of 10, my wife answered yes to 7, which gave her a pretty good idea that she might be pregnant. On the other hand, I answered yes to all 10 questions and was totally convinced for about an hour that I was with child. Question number 9 was the sealer. Have you missed your period? Well, I'm still waiting, if anything, so yes, almost certainly. Now, when Heidi was born, this is my favourite story to tell. When Heidi was born, there were no doctors there, there were no midwives, there was just me. I had to deliver Heidi all by myself. Don't get too impressed too quickly. Let me give you the backstory. First of all, we'd wanted to have a home birth. My wife, who I used to call Bambi because she was cute and cuddly and I wanted to shoot her mum. My wife, she wanted a home birth, and I agreed with that. I affirmed the idea of a home birth. Of course I did. Of course I agreed with a home birth. When else is your wife going to let you have a paddling pool up in the living room? It's not going to happen, is it? However, we've seen Call the Midwife, and on Call the Midwife, when they're about to have a baby, they call the midwife, and the midwives actually turn up. Well, not in our life, they didn't. I should say here that the problem is not the NHS. The NHS are amazing and do an increasingly good job under increasingly desperate circumstances. The problem here is the length of time it took Heidi to get from inside my wife to outside my wife. Our first daughter, Alice, 24 hours of labour. That's not uncommon for a first child. 24 hours of labour. I went through all the Harry Potter films back to back. It was fantastic. They say labour's painful. I was having a lovely time. However, by contrast, at a conservative estimate, Heidi's labour lasted a grand total of 45 minutes. From first contraction to splashdown, 45 minutes. I'll level with you. it almost took longer to make her in the first place. That bit might not be true. Anyway, we realise we're about to have a baby. So I ring St Mary's Hospital in Manchester, which is where we are at the time. I speak to the chief midwife. I say, we're about to have a baby. Please send a doctor, send a midwife, send Professor Dumbledore, send somebody more capable than me at delivering a child. The chief midwife, very calm and collected. She's seen it all before. She said, Mr Kine, please remain calm. The midwives are on their way, but I don't think they're going to make it on time because they're stuck in traffic. I am already angry at this point. I say, well, yeah, it's a shame, isn't it, that it's 2017. There hasn't been a vehicle invented that could get trained medical professionals from a hospital to an emergency without the need of getting caught in traffic. Might I suggest you invent such a machine? Perhaps a van-like contraption with a sound and light show on it or something like that. She bristles slightly. She says, I realise that you mean an ambulance. Oh, do you, Columbo? You've cracked that code, have you, Miss Marple? I said, send one of your magic ambulances. The midwife says, please, Mr. Kine, remain calm. We're doing the best we can. We're sending four midwives. That's the very best that we can do. But we've run out of ambulances, and so they're in a minibus. What? They're in a minibus? What, are they on the way to Alton Towers or something, are they? Is it midwives on tour? Is it, oi, oi, what happens in midwifery stays in midwifery? She says, do your best, as she puts the phone down. I'm absolutely mortified at this point. I don't know what I'm going to do. I look at my wife sitting there in the birthing pool in the middle of the living room, and I just say, they're not coming. They're not coming. What are we supposed to do? I don't know how to deliver a baby. What are we supposed to do? They're not coming. My wife, absolute legend. She stayed so calm. She said, honey, look at me. Stop crying. She said, remember the breathing. Breathe. 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 She said, listen. This is quite a pickle, but there's nothing we can do about this. All we can do in this current predicament is to take ownership over the situation in which we presently find ourselves flummoxed. I'm paraphrasing here. She might have been swearing a bit more than that. She said, my husband, I love you and I know you're totally incompetent, but please listen to me. If no one's coming, if help is not on its way, then it is just very simple. You, my love, are going to have to help me deliver our daughter. And I said, no, no, thank you. I don't want you. You can't make me. Leave me alone. You're not my real dad. I was panicking at this point. I didn't know what I was saying. The problem is that my wife and I are both Christians. And so she was able to challenge me with that one phrase that any Christian can use to challenge any other Christian at any point in time. She's sitting there in the birthing pool. She says, honey, think about this. What would Jesus do? I said, oh, no. How are you supposed to respond to that? I mean, I said, you know what? You're absolutely right. You've got me. What would Jesus do? So I pretended to be dead and hid in a cave for 3 days. That was my response. I have to say, that's my favourite joke in the show, but it's not my exact theology, in case anyone thinking of booking me for a show. I said, let's do it. I said, I don't have a choice. Let's do it. Let me help you. How do I help? She said, use the TENS machine. You know what the TENS machine is. You get these pads, you put them on the mum's back. It delivers little shocks into the nervous system. That's supposed to even out the pain of the labour. But I'm sorry, from a man's perspective, that's totally ridiculous. Ah, I'm in so much pain with this childbirth. Tell me how to help you. Electrocute me, you fool, of course. Give me more pain. I am woman. Bring it on. At this point, Alice, our older girl, who's only three at the time, she comes downstairs. Not only does she come downstairs, but she's changed out of her Peppa Pig pyjamas and changed into her $7.99 Mother Care nurse's outfit. Yes. And she stands in the doorway with her hands on her hips and she says, Daddy, I'm here now. May I help? I say, no, you may not help. You're 3 years old. It's 1:30 a.m. Go back to bed. And then I realised that, ironically, by wearing this Mother Care nurse's outfit, she was actually the most highly qualified medical professional currently on the premises. I said, please, Alice, take over. You're up. High five. Once more into the breach, as they don't normally say in this context. Happy ending to this story. A few minutes later, Heidi was born. She bungee jumped into the birthing pool. And then I got into the pool with my wife and with Heidi. Alice stood by the side of the pool. And she was, you know, she was beautiful and disgusting and lovely, as all newborn babies were. And we called her Heidi because she's our second baby, a little girl. We call her Heidi. And that comes from the old German word Adelheid, which translates roughly into English as not the son I was hoping for. Beautiful name for a beautiful baby. It was our first moments together as a family of four. 1 hour later, four midwives finally turn up. 1 hour later, they turn up with candy floss and, you know, pictures of themselves on the Nemesis. The doorbell goes at 2:30 a.m. Alice, who's the only one not soaking wet, says, "I'll get it." She goes to the front door, opens the front door. There's these four very anxious looking midwives staring down at her. My little 3-year-old girl with her hands on her hips, her mother care nurse's outfit, her little plastic stethoscope that she's taken out of a doctor's kit and put around her neck. She faces down these four midwives and she just says, ever so calmly, "My work here is done." And then just as calmly goes back to bed. She's on nights, you see, so she needs to get the rest in. To finish, I just want to give a little message, hopefully an encouraging one. Based on what I've just said, you see, when you have kids, you realise that you love them unconditionally. You realise that no matter what they do, you will always love them and that you would die personally so that they could live. It's not just with children, though, that we discover our wiring for love. We are wired for unconditional love. We all desire that state of being in relationship where we are fully loved, even as we are fully known. And you know what? Whatever your worldview, you know that you're wired for this. You know you believe in unconditional love because it's noticeable by its absence as much as by its presence. You know you desire unconditional love when you feel rejected. Rejection is the absence of acceptance and being secure in that loving relationship. We're all going after it. We're wired to go after unconditional love. And some people jump from bed to bed, from relationship to relationship, looking for that one person who will love them unconditionally and not reject them. Someone might say, "I can't disclose myself fully to this person because if they knew who I really was, if they knew what was beneath the surface, they wouldn't love me, they wouldn't accept me, they would reject me." The ultimate love story, of course, is Romeo and Juliet, the Montagues and the Capulets of Verona, these two young people who over the course of three acts fall in love and ultimately die, give up their lives because they realise that the love for each other is better and more important than life. So their love is worth dying for. Now, it's a great story. It's also a grim reminder that even the best human relationships end with a funeral. Whatever the greatest human relationship you have is, whether it's with a parent or a child or a partner or a lover or a friend, invariably that relationship will end with one of you standing over the casket of the other. I don't want to sound too grim, but let me make it a little bit worse. If Christianity is not true, if any other worldview is true, then Romeo and Juliet is not just theatrically, dramatically true, but cosmically, universally, theologically true. Because there is no worldview outside of Christianity which offers you a God who loves you unconditionally, no matter what you have done or who you are. And this is not just self-aggrandizing Christian bias. In the Quran, it says Allah loves not the unbelievers. If Islam is true, which it might be, and you're not a Muslim, well, I'm sorry, God doesn't love you. In all of these Eastern religions, the cool ones that everyone's really into, there is no personal God to love you unconditionally. Gandhi, one of the greatest men of all time, said, "It is an unbroken torture to me that I do not know my creator." Gandhi was a Hindu and a fantastic man, but he didn't claim to know God. He didn't claim to be able to know God or to have the permission or the access to know God personally. So we can't talk about a God of unconditional love in other religions because God hasn't revealed himself personally to be loving or otherwise. And you know, we have a word for people who love you from a distance without revealing their identity. We call them stalkers. The compelling thing about Christianity is even if it's false, it offers and promises that state of being that every single human being knows they are wired for. It promises to deliver that state of affairs that every single human being throughout time knows they desire. And that is the state of being unconditionally loved. So Romeo and Juliet is in three acts. Let me give you Christianity in three acts. And look, I know it's an abstract story, and maybe rationally to you, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but maybe think about it emotionally. Act one, Jesus being born as a baby, is God's way of saying to you, I'm here. I've come to find you. You're not alone in the universe. Emmanuel means God with us. I've come to find you. That's act one. Act two, Jesus dying on the cross is God's way of saying to you, look, I know you're in pain. I know that you're suffering. I know what it means to suffer, and I'm suffering with and for you. I have compassion on you. Compassion just means to suffer with. There is no other God who would even bruise himself for you. Jesus dies for you. That's act two. Act three, the resurrection. And even at Christmas, we celebrate the resurrection. We celebrate Easter even at Christmas. As Arsene Wenger said, Christmas is important. Easter is decisive. The resurrection, act three, is God's way of saying to death that otherwise gets to beat every single one of us, I'm sorry, not today, not on my shift. You don't get to win. You don't get to have the final say. Christianity is that one story where Romeo and Juliet get their fourth act, where you get that relationship that you know you're wired for, and you don't just have it now, you get to keep it forever. You've probably been in a lot of pain this year. I know I have. If any other religion is true, if Christianity is false, then your cries of pain are either unheard or unheeded. And yet Jesus's life starts and ends with a cry. It starts with the cry of a baby in a manger and ends about 33 years later with Jesus on the cross, taking on the powers of death and saying, it is finished, crying out, it is finished. My work here is done. You know, the cross is the thing that killed Jesus, but it is a stop sign for everything that's trying to kill you. The cross is a cosmic restraining order against the powers of death and destruction arrayed against you. So as abstract as it might be, as foolish as it might seem to you, think about the emotional impact of that story. God loving us unconditionally requires him to be vulnerable. What better way than coming as a baby in a manger and ending that story by saying, it is finished. My work here is done. And because it is finished, you're not finished. Because he is not finished with you. Merry Christmas.